Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. As you might expect, the year interview series continues. We're now more than halfway through the year. Imagine that when it comes to our look back at pro wrestling. And on this episode, I am very excited, very, very excited to welcome a first-time guest and someone you've known of, heard of, watched compete in the ring, in all types of rings all over the place. You've heard him on this very network, Lance Storm, for the very first time. And here, I thought I was going to get Lance on a week when he wasn't doing anything because Brian Alvarez is on vacation, or Lance is doing a ton of shows this week. Regardless, it was great to have him here for the very first time. We talked about the month of August, which was the debut of CM Punk in AEW. In an AEW ring, his first appearance on TV in like 8 years. Obviously not his in-ring debut, but you get the idea. So we talk about the whole first dance thing, the Punk thing, everything that happened in WWE during the month, all those type of things. So this is a really fun episode. Let's get right to it. Lance Storm, yours truly, the new Thrill Seekers. I should have said that on the show. Talking about August 2021 in the year of pro wrestling. Let's get it. Well, you know, you get to be my age and you realize that you kind of have everything in life, right? You have your family, your health, your house, your cars, your, you know, TV, all that type of stuff. So it doesn't stop my wife from asking me, Josh, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, I get everything, honey. I get everything. And she says, come on, just tell me. So I say, you know what, hon? I wistfully look off into the distance, into the woods, and I say, you know what I really like for Christmas is Lance Storm to be on my podcast. She looks at me with her beautiful blue eyes, gazes and says, a bark. Who is Lance Storm? And she may not know who he is, but you all know who he is. And he is here today for the very first time, Lance Storm. Lance, I told you before, I'm glad you're here. I can't believe you're finally here. Max the dog is here and we're off and running. Can you believe it?
Yeah, Max does a lot of run-ins, although at least with the way we record, I have my own mute button, so occasionally I'll be able to get him out of the conversation. But yeah, I'm glad I can make your Christmas wishes come true, although I can relate. We're to the point in life where it's like, it comes to Christmas, it's like, what do I want? It's like, do I need? It's like, I've been home for 2 years. There's not a whole lot in life I need other than freedom to go outside.
Yeah, it's. I think the automation of like being able to buy stuff from Amazon or buy stuff online, especially, you know, obviously during the pandemic, but it's like now it's like if I need something during the year, I mean, as long as it's, you know, not too crazy expensive or something, I just get it, right? I mean, you usually don't wait and have, oh, this power drill or this, you know, thing we needed to organize my office or something like that. You don't have to wait until Christmas. It's like, I want to get it now because I need it now and I get it now. So then at the end of the year, it's like, well, what do you need for this month? You know, it's just like, there's not really like fun stuff. That's why, you know, it's for the kids, you know?
Yeah. My kids are adults now. So even that's some true. Of that is out of the way. Although yeah. To be honest, because I've been off work for 2 years now, I do feel guilty about spending money since I'm not actually the one out earning it now. So this year was a little easier because there's like a few things I wouldn't mind. Like, again, upgrade my Kindle. I don't need to, but I wouldn't mind a new one. So those kind of things ended up on my Christmas list this year, where in previous years I'd have just went out and bought them.
Yeah. So what we're doing here, for those that, thanks to Lance's fame, is have not heard this series yet. I go through, this is my first time doing this, I go through the year in pro wrestling, basically month by month, because there's simply too much stuff to contain in, you know, one episode. I know some people do that, but it's very hard because there's so many little things that happen, right? And the little rocks among the big boulders, so to speak, often kind of we look back and like, oh yeah, that happened or this happened or this happened or this happened. So we're going to focus on the month of August, if I have that right. Yeah, the month of August. And it was a very interesting month. We'll go through. And so I kind of go through organization by organization, a lot of the headlines that we have. Granted, there's going to be some things that don't get picked up, not every single result or something like that. That would keep us here for days. But I think, you know, this month, Lance, I think we'll start with AEW. In the past, you know, depending on kind of the news, WWE is led off. But it's hard to not lead off with AEW because it had what I think is easily the pro wrestling moment of the year, at least for me personally, and I think for many it was. It has the one of the things I thought was really artfully pulled off, as I just talked about in July when it was first announced, when I just did the episode with Mike Sempervivi, talking about July and how they announced it and so on. But CM Punk finally made his return to pro wrestling officially. Came to the United Center. There was no pre-announcement or anything like that, but again, very artfully done. And they didn't even have to say his name, but they built up enough trust and they built up enough goodwill among their fan base that they said, okay, we're just going to have this event. And Tony Khan said, I don't think fans will be disappointed. And they weren't. They sold out the place, legit sellout. CM Punk comes out. There was simply right from the start, which I thought that they should have done. I'm glad they did. Originally, I guess there was some talk about Tony Schiavone going to introduce him. I'm glad they didn't do that. Just let Punk, that kind of carry the moment. This was, I don't get this a lot with wrestling now and haven't in a while, but get goosebumps thinking about just how everyone just seemed to be really happy. And I think that was really, it was a fun moment. It was a collective moment on a Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. It was a moment. What were your thoughts on I know you obviously have talked about this before with Brian, but kind of your thoughts on everything and reflecting back at this now months later.
Yeah, I think even more than the moment of the year, it's like, I think that's one of the biggest moments in the last, you know, pick a number, five, you know, how long has he been gone? You know what I mean?
8 years, yeah. Yeah.
8 years, in that it was always the, you know, because everybody always comes back. And when he left, it was just WWE. And, you know, people seem pretty adamant, and I was too. It's like, there's a chance he's not coming back to WWE ever. So AEW opened that door, but they did a phenomenal job of it. And I, like many fans, was a big fan of CM Punk. So it's like, it was a really big moment. And it was thus far the only Rampage that was carried on TSN up here. So I got to watch it live on television.
Nice.
And it really was a great moment. And, you know, you talk about the way they did it. And I think enough of their fan base now, like I think wrestling news sites, The Observer, The Torch, whatever is your, you know, source of choice. Enough of the AEW audience, I think, is aware of those and follows those. So having Dave and Brian and whoever else reported, it's like, yeah, it's definitely Punk. It's definitely Punk. Was enough that we all figured it was likely enough that we have to see it just in case, but left that ounce of doubt. And I think that was the magic of the moment. And it reminded me of when I first broke into wrestling. It was still technically the kayfabe era, but let's be serious. It's like, you know, not many people actually really believed. And Keith said to me, he's like, anyone that asks always says, you know, wrestling's fake, isn't it? And he's like, there's that little ounce, that moment of doubt that's the magic and keeps it special. And that's what we have to preserve. And Tony and AEW and Punk managed to keep that ounce of doubt. It was, we really, really want this. We really think we're getting it, but we're not 100% sure. And that little bit of trepidation or whatever it is made it so much bigger. And you could see the joy in the audience and just the joy in Punk. You know, this, it was so authentic. And I think that made it special.
Yeah, I mean, look at, we just talked about Christmas. I mean, look at the season that we're in and what this is all built around, and especially with, you know, kids and everything. Just, it's the joy and the illusion and the people just being excited about something but not quite sure. Just, it's because so much of us these days is so cynical, especially when it comes to things like wrestling, just because we're so exposed to the business now, I think, in some aspects too much. The irony of saying that working for a website like this. But it's fun to have this. Yeah, right. It was that one, even myself, there's like that 1% of like, there's no way that he couldn't be there. Right. If it was just that question mark that really kind of made it intriguing. And that was like, okay, what are they going to do? Is it going to be, a match. Obviously, you know, they're not bringing back just to probably be an announcer. Like, you know, he's going to be back. And how is this going to work? And it, one of the things I thought was also that worked about it, and it's been talked about a lot, but just there's so few wrestlers now that are attached to a city like CM Punk is. And he's so proud of it. It's part of his merchandise. It's been part of his image. And, you know, and every wrestling recap show they've talked about, especially in WWE, you know, wrestler X goes to their hometown and gets buried, right? And they just lose, and or there's no effort to, you know, there's no effort to make it up like, oh, this is where they're from, right? Even sometimes at times they don't even tell you where the actual show is from, because they're almost embarrassed if it's a smaller city, when in reality people don't really care about that, looking for things to relate to. So it's I think that helped. He could not have debuted in any other city than Chicago, and I thought it just made it for one of those moments. I think is you know, it's hyperbole to say maybe one of the best of all time. But just, I think for a certain audience, it is one of those that people will never forget. So I guess in a way it could technically be, you know, one of those greatest moments of all time when it comes to a emotion, crowd, everything just coming together on one night.
Oh, I think it is. And, you know, you talk about the hometown. He's also fortunate enough to be from quite probably the hottest hometown to be from. Like, we talk about Chicago being one of the greatest wrestling cities, greatest wrestling crowds there are. You know, it's like Seth Rollins is from what, Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're going to sell out Dynamite or Raw or whatever in Des Moines. It's like, yeah, it's his hometown will be over, but it's no offense to Des Moines, Iowa. It's not Chicago. So it was perfect. The stars were aligned, and I think it'll be a much like the pipe bomb, something remembered forever.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of that course surrounding it, obviously he called out Darby Allin for the match for All Out. So we immediately knew when his next, not his next appearance, but kind of what we were building towards first. He talked afterwards to the media, saying, or Tony Khan did rather, says, or no, actually Punk did. It was no, you know, he said it's not a short-term deal or a part-time deal. He's there, and he certainly has been. He's been a featured part of the shows ever since. Ice cream bars, at the end of the promo, he mentioned the ice cream bars, and we learned that he bought, you know, 10,000 ice cream bars. Afterward, I mentioned about, you know, Tony Schiavone and this United Center selling out 12,000 tickets on the first day. That was back in July, just at the, you know, again, just at the announcement of the first dance, because people thought this has to be it, and then they were easily able to move the rest of those tickets afterwards. So, yeah, definitely one of the, you know, those top moments of the year. So after, I guess in the months afterward, has the Punk run thus far lived up to what you expected, or better, worse? What do you think?
I'm not one to create expectations. It's like, I'm more happy to just go along for the ride. You know, I'm a hiker, and it's like, I don't like to plan them. I just like to go and see where it takes me. And I think that's the way I am somewhat with wrestling. It's like, Punk is back. Awesome. Let's see where this goes. And I've just followed along. And for the most part, I'm really happy with it. I like the way he wrestles. Now, granted, because, as I mentioned, that first one was the only Rampage that airs on television up here. Anything he's done on Rampage since, I haven't been able to watch. You know, you can track it down on TSN streaming, but I don't do that. But I'm a big Punk fan. I've enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to where it goes further.
Well, let's go over the rest of these headlines from the month that was August in AEW and get thoughts on anything that stands out after I'm done. So Dark celebrated 100 episodes. Jon Moxley was on that episode of Dark. Ever-Eyes made their debut as 2.0 at the Dynamite, or the Homecoming edition of Dynamite, rather, and shortly thereafter, it was learned that they signed a full-time deal. Tony Khan said the terrible, quote-unquote, Max Caster rap shouldn't have aired on Dark. If you remember this, it referenced Simone Biles and just wasn't really that cool at all. And Max Caster, you know, he just disappeared for about 2 months after that and was never really explained why. Kind of weird how all that works. Ruby Soho, talking about news sites. So the tale of two headlines. Ruby Soho was rumored to sign with AEW when she could, and she did. Bray Wyatt was also expected to sign with AEW, and he still has not signed anywhere. Jamie Hayter and Fuego del Sol signed deals. A four-man booth was announced for was going to be the debut Rampage coming up later in the month, including Chris Jericho, someone that you know pretty well. Let's see. All Out. The main event was set for All Out. Obviously, Hangman Page not being involved in that, but Christian Cage was instead. Kenny Omega defending the AEW world title against him. Pac versus Andrade. Jericho's career was going to be on the line in a match against MJF. That was kind of playing off the Five Labors of Jericho storyline. Chris Statlander versus Britt Baker for the AEW women's title. Moxley, Kojima, the Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers cage match. And Miro versus Kingston were just a few of the matches set aside for September's All Out. Kiera Hogan made her debut. Kenny Omega and Christian, an Impact title match, was set to headline the August Rampage debut. Again, Hangman Page was taking some time off due to childbirth, which made sense for why he wasn't going to be involved in All Out. Ric Flair, it was said that he was expected to sign when AEW, when legally able to. That never happened for reasons we'll talk about on a future episode. Rio had a bad vaccine reaction and was out of action for a bit. In a headline that, especially the irony coming this weekend, or the coincidence rather, Sammy Guevara proposing on AEW Dynamite, and then this past weekend revealing that he's actually been separated or split up from his no longer fiance since October. So that is the irony there. Paul White was to debut in the ring at All Out, making his AEW in-ring debut, rather. Jon Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi was not happening at All Out, as previously been hinted at. CM Punk dropped a Daniel Bryan hint during one of his promos. I believe it was on the subsequent Dynamite from his Rampage appearance. It got people talking. There was a Gangrel appearance scrapped for AEW after Edge did a Brood promo, kind of building his match against Seth Rollins. The timing just bad for Gangrel. He was so appreciative of you know, potentially getting the invite there, but that surprise appearance was scrapped due to that. Five wrestlers were announced for the Jericho Cruise, and then AEW, Tony Khan said they're going to be taping most episodes of Dark at Universal Studios in Orlando at the same soundstage that TNA / Impact Wrestling did their shows at for years and years and years. Lance, thoughts on any of that?
I think the biggest thing is just all of the signings. Like, there's so many debuts. Like, you know, we talked about the Punk one being big. It's like, off the top of my head now, I can't even say where, how, or what happened in the Bryan Danielson debut. Like, I don't even remember.
His debut match?
Just how he debuted. Was it a promo? Was it a match? What was his first appearance? I don't even remember.
Yeah, he came. It was at the end of All Out. He came out with after Adam Cole had come out at the very end and
right.
The heels, okay. And all that. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. So much has happened. It becomes easy to forget.
Yeah, and it's like, I think after the Punk one, I think in some ways Ruby Soho is the one that stands out more to me. And maybe it was that the videos that she put out with the Destination Unknown, and it's like they were really well done. And it's like, okay, where is she going to end up? And I also worked with her my short producer run in WWE pre-pandemic and really liked the woman. So I was really happy for her. And I think, too, much like Punk, she just seemed so unbelievably happy. Mm. And in the pandemic, it's like just seeing people genuinely happy and having the time of their lives, I think, touches people. And I think we need more of it. So having babyface debuts and people genuinely just being happy with their life and happy with what they're doing, it's like, I want to see more of that.
Good point. Yeah, I think, you know, this is something that, you know, Dave and Brian kind of touch on briefly when there's new signings, and, you know, Dave is kind of hints at it a little bit, talking about, you know, AEW has they have so many, you know, guys and girls under contract right now. I, you know, kind of looking ahead, I think there's I think there's some sort of reckoning or some sort of like realignment that has to happen. They can't have everybody and have everybody be happy and constantly bring on new people and have everyone be like, okay, this is cool. Right. I mean, I think I'm glad they're going for it, but there is going to be a other side of the coin at some point, I would think. You know, you've been in the industry forever and you've been in a very packed locker room with, I'm sure, you know, WCW, WWE and what have you, that, you know, when I would think that when there's constantly new names being brought in, it's kind of like, well, what about the people that have been here for so long? Any thoughts on that?
I assume it is already happening. Like, there has to be talent that, you know, joined the beginning thinking that, you know, I'm going to take this chance. I'm going to go with this brand new company and, you know, get my spot and get my shine, so to speak. And then they just hired so many more people that you don't see them.
Right.
You know, I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, and it's like, when was the last time you saw Santana and Ortiz actually wrestle a tag match on television? There's so much talent that there's got to be people that are only on Dark and Elevation or on television once a month or once every other month that have to be thinking, it's like, yeah, it's a fun place to be and yeah, making a good living, but I was expecting more. You know, by nature, you know, it's a greedy industry. It's like, it's a out for yourself, get your spot, get your TV time, get over. There has to be some degree of dissatisfaction from someone who isn't featured as much as they want. There just has to be. You know, when they merge WCW and WWE into the WWE locker room, it's like you'd get to those pay-per-views and there would be, you know, 30 guys that aren't on them that are annoyed, dissatisfied, disappointed that they're not on those shows. So if it hasn't happened yet, it has to be coming. It just has to.
So let's flip to WWE, and they had, obviously, they were one of their biggest events of the year, and I think it's going to be one that they have even more focus on going ahead in the Nikon era. SummerSlam, Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada, and Brock Lesnar returning. No big surprise, or a little bit of a surprise there, but kind of how it came about was interesting. So after, so you never think that a John Cena return would kind of get overlooked. But in terms of news, but the big news coming out of the night was Brock Lesnar coming back, confronting Roman Reigns after he defeated Cena in the main event. And then, so their program still kind of goes on to this day, but that was the big news out of that. Becky Lynch returning, surprisingly, and defeating Bianca Belair for the SmackDown title. Again, this is this weird situation where, you know, Banks and Belair were going to have a match. And then everyone knew that maybe Banks wasn't fully cleared yet, due to a non-announced what everyone assumes to be COVID, just because the way everything worked out, but, you know, can't even confirm that, but it was just kind of odd. So, yeah, so Belair beat Carmella, and then Lynch comes out and just beats her in, like, I think it was less than a minute. It was just one of those kind of, like, just very, very odd. And they said, you know, let's have this classic match, I believe might be the line from Becky, and that just didn't happen. It was just kind of just odd, and you know, again, for someone they had built up so much time and effort in Belair, just to kind of have it happen like that was could have created a moment instead of creating a moment in the opposite way that what they wanted. RK-Bro winning the Raw Tag Team titles. Damian Priest winning the U.S. title. Charlotte Flair regaining the Raw Women's title. Bobby Lashley retained his title over Bill Goldberg. There was an Edge-Rollins match. Again, as I mentioned, the Lesnar return was a last-minute deal designed to appease Fox, because obviously Fox wants more attention on SmackDown on Friday nights. And there was also talk about WWE making an offer to Mike Tyson to be involved for SummerSlam, but due to his involvement with AEW and so on, he decided to turn them down. But this was obviously a newsworthy show, with something that I think they're going to try to kind of build up. I don't say as big as Mania, but I think, you know, Nick Khan wants these huge tentpole events for partners and media. And, you know, again, bring back one of their biggest stars in Brock Lesnar to confront Roman Reigns after he just beat John Cena. John Cena becoming an afterthought. It's kind of crazy stuff. But what do you remember about SummerSlam?
I remember the Becky Lynch more than anything. Like, when you mentioned the Cena return, I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, he was back this year. It's like,
is that crazy?
You know, it's much almost like the, you know, I forgot how Bryan Danielson returned. It's just there's so much going on that a John Cena return was forgotten, at least by me. But I think the Becky Lynch thing was the biggest, because, you know, I contend Becky Lynch was, certainly was for sure, because at the time, the biggest female star, you know, the industry's had. Period. You know, when she left, she was gigantic. I was there then, and it's like she was, for a time, I think, the top face of the company, top star they had, that was, you know, featured in all the key segments. So her coming back was gigantic. And I think the heel turn was a poor choice. As I mentioned, it's like it's a time where people want to be happy and see things that they enjoy. And it's like people love Becky Lynch. Now, I do understand the mentality behind the short match in that, especially with it attempting to be a heel turn, in that the mentality of you caught her off guard and surprised her and you stole a quick one. There's the psychology that that doesn't hurt her as much as having a big, long, fair fight and just beating her. Because then there's no question. It's like, yeah, you're better than them. You know, using the MMA analogy, it's like, you know, if you land that first punch and you knock somebody out in 10 seconds, it's like there's question. It's like, okay, would he have won if this fight went longer? But if they have a 5-round fight and you win all 5 rounds and you win 50-45, even with a decision, it's like, that was pretty decisive. But if they just throw hands in the first 30 seconds and one connects, it's like, oh man, if they fought 10 times, it's like, we might get 9 different results. And I think that was the mentality. Let's not hurt Bianca. We'll just surprise her and get, you know, steal the win and help get Becky some heat. But getting the most popular woman you've ever had heat, I think, was a bad call.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were talking earlier about, you know, that we need more people to root for, Becky Lynch was the first one that came to mind. You know, it's just a weird mentality. I know, you know, people talk about ad nauseum, WWE doesn't know how to build baby faces, but they really don't. They just, I don't think they're into it. You know, I just don't think they like it. I remember, was it a couple of years ago when Vince McMahon said, it might have been on Investor's Call or something like that, where essentially he's like, you know, we don't do heels and baby faces anymore. It's just like, I don't understand that mentality, if that truly is the mentality within the company, because look at pop culture. You it's not just heels all over the place. Granted, there are, you know, dark figures, the Breaking Bad types, you know, the good person gone bad. Am I a good person? All this stuff. And that scratches the itch, but there's plenty of situations where you see, you know, quote unquote baby faces in pop culture, movies and so on, that it's like, yeah, I'm rooting for this person. That's kind of the point, is you root for something, you get behind something. It's why team sports is such a big deal. And our home teams are, those are our baby faces in a sense, right? So it's a, yeah, they just don't seem that interested in doing that. And I think that's caused a disconnect with the audience as a result.
Well, I think there's two misthoughts that they continue to make. And it's the, you know, it was from the, you know, Eddie Guerrero lying, cheating, stealing, Steve Austin. It's like, well, they're not baby faces. It's like, yes, they are. It's just the definition of what a baby face is has changed over the years. You don't have to be a goody two shoes to be a baby face, but it's still antagonist protagonist. It's like, that's the basis of storytelling. And I firmly believe you have to do that. And then the other misthought that I think Vince makes is he has this thought process of you get baby faces over by having them sell. And there's a lot of people that will say, yeah, yeah. And it's like, no, you're not thinking this through. You draw money and you get an angle over by having an over babyface sell. You don't get them over by selling. Because if they sell before they're over, they're just jobbers. And it's the same thing. I've actually talked to Dave about this, where he says, well, you know, Daniel Bryan got over by being buried. And I'm like, no, he was over first. He continued to stay over and maybe even got more over. But Bryan Danielson was over well before the Yes Movement stuff started. Hogan sold a lot, but he got over first. And you have to get the babyface over first before you just have them sell. And I think that's a very fine, important part that gets overlooked.
Good point. Let's go through this first chunk of other WWE news and notes. Ric Flair requested and got his WWE release. Initially, there was questions about, you know, did WWE just outright cut him without a request? Flair was adamant in saying that wasn't the case, and still saying that to this day. At this point, who knows and who really cares? But Ric Flair, all these years gone from WWE, and later saying that he made more in his first week of podcasting with Conrad than he did like the last year. First year in the business overall, when of course that was back in what, the 70s or whatever. But also he said, basically intimated he was making like hardly any money at all with WWE near the end. So Ric Flair out and about. JoJo Offerman, the wife of Bray Wyatt, no longer under contract. Renee Paquette's non-compete was nearly up in August. You can believe that. Dakota Kai did a dark match for SmackDown, I believe. And I believe that, or actually it might have been Raw because it aired actually on Main Event the week after. Montez Ford returned after a long absence. He was out since June. WWE was resolving issues with Chelsea Green over the use, being able to use her birth name. So that became one of the stories. Like, why can't she use her name on the indies? That's actually her name. That actually got cleared up. Good for her. Keith Lee detailed some of the health issues he had gone through, COVID, heart inflammation, all these type of things kind of what kept him out for so long. 205 Live said they would occasionally feature talents over 205 pounds. One of the worst named TV shows I think WWE has ever done. King of the Ring tourney was set for October. Nakamura won the Intercontinental title. I mentioned Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks missing a whole bunch of shows, house shows and so on. It's kind of this mystery as to why, even though people kind of just assume it was COVID, but it was just, you know, again, the mystery around it got more attention, I think, than if they just said, yeah, we're sick, we're going to be out for a few weeks. Survivor Series was announced for Brooklyn, and it sounded like Bill Goldberg and Matt Riddle were cool after all, that they talked backstage after a Goldberg appearance, and they had had some heat. I don't know if it was in 2021, or it might have been 2020, but after all this time, they were bros after all. So thoughts on any of that, Lance?
I can't imagine them actually being bros, and they have buried the hatchet, but they are two very different people. I think the Chelsea Green thing was really funny, but I assume it was more just a case of, like, WWE, you know, trademarks everything. If they're in their shows, if they're in games and stuff, they trademark everything. Even if when you leave, you know, the trademark goes with you, and maybe it was just the case of processing it through. Because it was funny. There was a point, I guess it was right after I was leaving the roster, so 04, when, I don't know whether it was just for a new company they were working with or whatever, but there was this, we have to trademark every possible name in the show. If you're in our show, we have to have it trademarked. And I got a call from the office. I think they sent me paperwork, or whatever, to trademark Lance Storm. And I'm like, this isn't your name. I'm not signing this.
Yeah.
And I just ignored them. And it's like, I was starting as a trainer in OVW anyway. And they called me at Edge's wedding in 04, I assume. And they're like, we have some paperwork we have to send it. Where are you right now? We're going to FedEx it to you. And I'm like, what? And so they ended up FedExing it to Christian's house. And it's like, I got it. And it's like, this is a trademark, my name. I just called them back. I'm like, I wrestled on your shows for 4 years. You never trademarked Lance Storm. Lance Storm doesn't exist anymore. I'm a trainer in developmental. It's like, I'm not signing this. And they were like, okay. And so I assume, because again, my contract stated that I owned Lance Storm. And when I left, I kept Lance Storm. So it's like, even though they were acknowledging that Lance Storm was mine and I owned it, they still wanted to trademark it. So I assume that's what they did with Chelsea.
Yeah. What's a wrestler wedding like when it comes to civilians, so to speak? Are they just kind of like looking around in awe at all these giant people and being like, what is going on here?
Well, the thing is, like, if you're at the wrestling wedding, you're friends with wrestlers. Like, Edge isn't going to invite a bunch of people that he doesn't know. And even, you know, by the time the marriage is happening, if the wife or the spouse or whoever isn't the actual famous person, their family has already met the other half. So
true. Yeah,
everyone there is pretty cool. And it's, you know, it's all about the couple getting married. So it's other than, again, you have some very colorful personalities, there isn't a whole lot of marking out, if you will.
Mm. Let's go to the rest of the month. In August, WB and Spotify announced a podcast relationship with Spotify's Ringer brand under Bill Simmons. Daivari and Molly Holly were hired as producers. Goldberg said he had two matches left on his deal. I can't remember if this was before the SummerSlam match or not, so he might be down to one left to go. WWE announced they're partnering with Major League Baseball on officially licensed title belts. This is a big thing. They like to send title belts to various championship teams from all sports. That actually relationship may expand out quite a bit, and of course, fans can buy them for exorbitant amounts of money. Let's see. Oh, Roman Reigns said that CM Punk was not as good or over as John Cena or The Rock. A little tweak there. Natalya returned to action after being out of, I think, about a month or so with ankle surgery. WWE 2K 22 is announced it was going to be out in March, and that SummerSlam overall did record revenue. This is part of kind of some other big announcements. Crown Jewel, in October, they officially announced they're returning to Saudi, but they actually put the Crown Jewel name on it and told the fans it was going to be coming in October. Money in the Bank was set for July 2022 in Las Vegas, so they're going to return to Allegiant Stadium. Nick Khan said that WB cuts were not readying themselves for a sale, and that a NXT revamp was imminent. Pat McAfee, SmackDown announcer, got the coronavirus. WWE has learned that they were no longer scouting for indie talent, and they brought in some new recruits, mainly not from the indies. Bobby Stevenson, Ben Buchanan, Brady Booker, Jessica Wynilko, it's probably a different name now, Joseph Fatu, and then Joshua Dawkins. Thoughts on any of that?
Big thing is, you know, obviously the announcement of they will not be hiring or scouting indie talent. Because, like, I know, especially through my virtual coaching, it's like you talk about people and it's like there's people who have been, you know, training and working hard and dreaming and aspiring of getting signed by them. And it was like, you know, it's a big kidney punch with a, oh, like, am I now off limits? Like, that is no longer an avenue available for me. And, you know, they're currently in a tryout at the moment, and Roxy is there. So obviously they are still scouting indie talent, and they made a statement that they're not sticking to. But, you know, I just think it's crazy when you make declarative statements that, A, you're never going to hold on, because at the end of the day, Vince will bend any rule there is if he decides he sees something he wants. So if you stand out and have value, Vince will always look at you. But it's just, I think it's demoralizing to a lot of the indie talent out there that it was like, you know, this has been my goal. And for years now, WWE has said, this is the path you take to get here. So we've been following that path with a destination in mind. And now you've just decided it's like, no, we're going a completely different way. So I think it's demoralizing, but I would recommend talent that are out there not give up, because the wind always changes, rules are made to be broken, and Vince sometimes lies. It's like these are the things you have to be aware of. So that's still out there. And then the other is just, you know, the podcast thing that, you know, it's 2021. Everybody who's ever done anything in their life has a podcast. And I remember when WWE announced this podcast partnering thing, and I'm like, I know Devon's got one, but it's like, are there any? Like, what is this deal actually produced? Like, maybe there's a bunch and I'm just not aware of them, but I assume probably New Day has one and Devon does, but it's like, is that the whole big Spotify connection?
I don't even know if the New Day one is part of this. That might be something they own separately. But yeah, I think it was just like to do some narrative stuff. And yeah, I think it was kind of, I don't know if it's really kind of fully taken hold yet, but yeah, it's, I'm always, you know, I'm always
like tout.
Yeah. Tout. Oh boy. I'm always kind of, you know, dubious of when an organization puts out their own podcast, like, you know, UFC, does theirs. They have, AEW has theirs, cause you're going to get it through their filtered, even though ironically, most of them are like, I think UFC is UFC uncensored, or might be AEW uncensored or unfiltered is one of them, of like, you're going to get the real dirt. It's like, not if they don't want you to. Right. I mean, so yeah, it's just kind of like one of those things, you know?
Yeah. Other people were doing it and making money. So WWE has to get a deal in somehow.
Of course. Of course. So speaking of Vince McMahon and the wind changing, let's flip to NXT. NXT made a ton of cuts. And again, this is following a, you know, 2 or 3 month stretch where they just were taking the axe to their roster. NXT cuts, and some of these were surprising, especially, you know, Bronson Reed, who is a North American champion, a guy that was at one point looked to be tabbed for the main roster, got the tryout on Main Event, and got his opportunity there, and then ended up being cut. Bobby Fish, Mercedes Martinez, Leon Ruff, Tyler Rust, Jake Atlas, Ari Sterling, Kona Reeves, Zechariah Smith, Asher Hale, Giant Zangier, Stephon Smith, Denzel Desjardins, who's Desmond Troy. The cuts are learned to be led by the aforementioned Vince McMahon, and that big changes were coming to the brand. Boy, didn't we know that. Pete Dunne and Adam Cole's contracts were learned to be expiring soon, and Cole's actually expired during the month. You guys remember that whole thing. He actually extended out his deal so he could fulfill his commitment for TakeOver 36. Cole met with Vince McMahon, and of course, we've heard a lot of news either coming out of that or around that of some ideas they had with Adam Cole, which obviously would not come to fruition. We learned Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae were expecting their first baby. NXT was rumored to be discussing a return to taped shows. That actually did not happen. It was more they were going to do a run of taped shows, I think, for 1 or 2 weeks, while the PC, the Performance Center, was being renovated because NXT was done and their partnership with Full Sail all done. One of those things that you kind of saw, and maybe you don't really think about, but you would hear Paul Levesque talk about how important Full Sail was to him, not from just a facility standpoint, but also from a staffing standpoint, from all these kids who are, you know, learning on the job, production and things like that. If you know anything about Full Sail, it was kind of surprising because it seemed to be a really good partnership. But yeah, that ended for WWE, and then a new logo was also released for NXT as well. NXT TakeOver, remember those? Cameron Grimes won the $1 million title, getting that and handing it back to Ted DiBiase after that angle with LA Knight was done. Kaylee Ray made her debut after a long run in NXT UK overseas. Ilya Dragunov defeated Valter for the NXT UK title, ending his, I believe it's an 866-day reign or something along those lines. Kyle O'Reilly beat the aforementioned Adam Cole in their final match, the Undisputed Era End or something like that. I can't remember what the tagline was. And then Samoa Joe, coming out of retirement, so to speak, winning the NXT title from Karrion Kross and would soon disappear shortly thereafter. Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis, it was announced they were going to get married in September. Carmelo Hayes, my guy, Christian Casanova, who we saw in the Indies here, has been on this show before, won the NXT breakout tournament. I think he's really, really good, really happy with what he's doing, proud of what he's doing. And Danny Burch returning to action after 5 months out due to, I believe, shoulder surgery. NXT, yeah, undergoing we saw what NXT would eventually become, but this was really not really the start of it, but really kind of the wheels were set into motion that the black and gold brand was going to go down pretty quick.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest shames, disappointments of the year. Like, I don't think there has ever been, again, let's call it a company for the sake of calling NXT a company, that's ever had a greater series of quality big shows ever. Like, I don't know what the worst takeover was, but I guarantee you it was a great show. And it's just such a shame because I think, you know, one bad decision led to another. And I think live on USA as a means by which to combat AEW was that first bad decision that changed what NXT's goal had to be, and it ruined something that was really special because, like, 2.0, it's like, I can't watch it. And I don't even understand its goal anymore, in that when it's like, okay, fine, you know, handpick the really top big guys you want and develop them for the main roster. But it's like, you get guys out there doing a 1 minute squash match. It's like, how is that preparing them for anything? And the old NXT, the black and gold, and even before the USA for that matter, when it was just on the network, it's like, it was such a great product. And I think it had goodwill with the fan base. Fans loved it. Fans believed in it. Fans supported it. And those takeovers, like, how many times did we watch that Saturday takeover and go, is there any way SummerSlam can follow this show? Is there any way WrestleMania can follow this show? You know, Sasha and Bayley in Brooklyn, and even go back to the early days of, you know, Neville and Sami Zayn. It's like, my God, there was some of the most fantastic matches and even storytelling, like the original Bayley, the growth and development of Bayley as a babyface. And, you know, we talk about developing babyfaces. Sami Zayn is a babyface in that program with Neville. It was such an amazing product. And the decision that put it head to head where it had to be the ratings mover against AEW, I think, doomed it. And this 2.0, you know, a lot of people lost their jobs. And I think a lot of the goodwill and the joy of those great NXT takeovers are a thing of the past. And that makes me sad.
Talk about moments. When you mentioned Sami Zayn, the Nakamura debut, I thought that was, it was against Sami Zayn. I think it might have been to open that takeover, if I remember right. Maybe not. But that was a moment when they had the way they did the intro, and people were just, you know, that wrestling god was there, right? And people that may just be somehow familiar with Nakamura from his current WWE run, it's two different things altogether. The presentation was different. It was, I want to say it was AEW before AEW, but it scratched that itch that WWE wasn't providing. People wanted that, a super indie, I guess, with more production value, bigger names and more money behind it. And it worked. You're right. The TV worked, the takeovers worked. They were anticipated, and kind of see what's become, less than a year later from really when it was hitting, or even 2 years later, whatever you want to say. It was, it's crazy that happened. Never would have predicted that.
Well, even, we talk about, and they talked about it, where it's like, it wasn't developing the talent that they needed on the main roster. Cause look at all these guys that they brought up and didn't work. And it's like, that's the head to head era. But when you go back, I remember the time where it's like, all the top matches in WWE were former NXT people. And they touted that, the NXT four, the Sasha, Charlotte, Bailey, and Becky, were all NXT call-ups, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's like, these are a lot of big name stars. And I think too, we mentioned baby faces, on how important baby faces are, and the illusion, misconception of what a baby face is. And I told this story on a different, actually it was before we did the show, when I was with Andrew Zarian, about how as a fan, I wasn't really a big Hulk Hogan fan because he cheated. He'd rake eyes and rake the back. And I talked about this moment that I remember as so important to what I thought a baby face was. And it was in the NWA when, JJ was always screwing over Dusty Rhodes by whacking him with the heel of the shoe. And there's the big match. To be honest, I don't know if it was with Tully or Flair. I think it was with Flair. But the cheating spot goes awry and the shoe lands in the ring. And Dusty picks it up and the crowd's going insane because they want Dusty to fight fire with fire and hit Ric Flair with the heel of the shoe. And Rick feeds up and Dusty looks at the shoe. He throws it over his shoulder and hits the bionic elbow. And I'm like, that's a hero. He's justified to use any means necessary, but he still did it the right way. And it reminded me of the program with Sami Zayn and Neville, when they built Sami Zayn as this tremendous baby face, when they were saying, true blue white meat baby faces don't work anymore. Meanwhile, Sami Zayn was one of the most over guys there as that white meat baby face. And the program with Neville, where Neville kept telling him, you never get to the top unless you take shortcuts. You have to compromise Sammy or you'll never beat me. And there was that struggle with, can he become NXT champion without compromising his morals? And they told that story and Sammy stuck to his guns and he won. And there was a huge reaction. And I'm like, this is such great storytelling. He's such a great babyface. And it's like, where did that go?
Yeah. Let's flip to Impact and Ring of Honor. We'll combine all these into one. Impact, they launched their YouTube subscription channels. They were done with Twitch. Your old buddy, Christian Cage, won the Impact title on an AEW TV show, the debut of Rampage, defeating Kenny Omega for the title there. Just this continuation of a strange relationship between AEW and Impact. I don't know if I love Impact titles being defended on AEW TV more often than they are for Impact TV, but maybe a conversation for a different day. At Emergence, one of their Impact Plus specials, Christian, his first defense of the title, defeating Brian Myers, who won a battle royal to earn the title shot. And both the Good Brothers and Josh Alexander retained their respective titles. The TNA title was actually retired by Christian Cage, because remember, they had both belts because there was this whole thing with Moose and all this stuff. Anyway, TNA title was finally retired by Christian Cage, and it was now teasing me facing Ace Austin, great worker there at September's Victory Road. And Zicky Dice signed a multi-year deal with the company. Flipped to Ring of Honor, Glory by Honor, two-night event in Philadelphia. All the champions retained, and then Matt Taven lost his world title shot in a cage match against Vincent. Death Before Dishonor was announced as we move to Philadelphia. It was claimed to be due to a Florida COVID surge, even though, it was COVID still around all over the place. So many were thinking it was just due to low ticket sales. And if you looked at some of the ticket sales at the time, it might have been pretty accurate. Card started to take shape. And then Leo Moriarty was also announced to be making his debut on that show as well, prior to him signing with AEW. And then Roosh underwent surgery. Not a ton there. Obviously, Christian became the Impact champion, and kind of the everything old is new again, returning back to a company that he got some prominence in after leaving WWE, and obviously eventually going back to WWE. Had kind of a fun run there, which a lot of people remember. But yeah, the amount of AEW or Impact title defenses on AEW, for some reason, I was like, just kind of bugged me. May have not bugged you as much, but yeah, thoughts on any of that stuff?
I think on the whole, it did give Impact a little more awareness. Like, it's really hard with, you've got Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Rampage, NXT, Impact. It's like, it's hard to be number, 3, 4, 5, whatever number you want to put them. So I think the association and having Impact mentioned on Dynamite and having, AEW talent on their show periodically, I think on the whole was probably a positive. But it is hard when you don't have as much access. But again, Impact doesn't tend to do a lot of world title matches on television, and they don't have that many big events. So the fact that the Impact title was defended in AEW, I don't think is that bad of a deal. But I do think, again, it's hard to judge because I'm in the industry, but it's like, I think Impact got a few more eyeballs in the whole course of events. So I think on the whole, it was a good thing to, having Kenny Omega, who at the time people thought was, the biggest, hottest, best in the world. And it's like, he's out there with the Impact Championship. I think that gives the company a degree of credibility that, Kenny Omega cares about that title and Christian cared about that title. And then, they managed to get it to Moose eventually. So it's like, I think Impact has had a pretty decent year, or at least as can be, considering the pandemic and everything else. And, you mentioned Ring of Honor, and it's, again, laughing isn't appropriate, and it's not really funny, but it's like, it's so odd that when the pandemic first hit, 2020 and into the beginning of 2021, the talk was nobody took care of their talent and was more careful about COVID and making sure that, quarantining and protecting the talent, and they didn't fire anybody and everybody got paid. And, Ring of Honor really did the best job. And then they released everybody in the entire company is now like, what's going on? And it was like, they held true through the worst of the pandemic. And now we're left with, are they going to be back in 2022?
Yeah. And when they do come back, how do they stand out? How are they different, to your point, being a 3-4-5? How do you become the best of that 3-4-5? And they have a lot of competition to do that. So let's flip to Japan again. I always say this with an asterisk. I'm not a big Japanese wrestling watcher, so we'll go through these and see if you have any thoughts on this stuff. Ishii versus Moose. When aforementioned Moose added to Resurgence, the big event coming up in Los Angeles. New Japan Strong was announced. They're going to be heading out to both Texas and Pennsylvania, and they were going to move their show to Saturdays, meaning essentially every single night of the week, except for Sundays on the regular, there was going to be a brand new pro wrestling show every single night. Danny Garcia and Matt Morse made their strong debuts at Resurgence. Tanahashi won the United States title, the IWGP US title, off of Lance Archer, who had just won it from John Moxley. Brody King was off the show due to COVID. Will Ospreay returned, a bit of a surprise, and disputed that he had been stripped of the IWGP title in an angle that's still kind of ongoing, and that surprise appearances by both Neji Nagata and the Grills of Destiny. Battle in the Valley was announced for San Jose in November. More COVID issues for New Japan Stardom throughout the entire month, including Takagi, Kenta, and more. Again, this New Japan just having the toughest couple years with both COVID restrictions, everything like that. And, they're still kind of trying to plug away. El Desperado and Kanemaru won the Super Junior Tag League tournament. Ibushi was revealed as challenging Tanahashi for his newly won United States title at Wrestle Grand Slam. Will Ospreay, Minoru Suzuki, Lance Archer were added to the company's Autumn Attack shows and also Showdown in Philly, which I just mentioned. Minoru Suzuki seemingly was working everywhere. He made appearances for AEW. I believe that was actually in September. On the Indies, GCW, Defy Wrestling, Strong, Impact. I mean, this guy was everywhere. When he came over to the States, he was not coming here for a vacation. He was working nonstop. And that Wrestle Grand Slam, for the very first time, the Stardom matches on the show were also going to be shown on New Japan World. I don't know if you're a big Japanese wrestling watcher, but thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I'm not. But I think this really showed the importance and value of New Japan Strong. Just that, you know, with the difficulty of foreigners and stuff going to Japan and all those issues, I think there's a lot of New Japan talent that really would have been out of sight, out of mind, and to an extent losing a degree of value if not for New Japan Strong and their working relationship with other companies, you know, with, you know, Suzuki being all over the place, but, you know, Finn Juice and Jay White being an Impact and all of the Japanese talent that came over and managed to work some New Japan Strong tapings. It's like that New Japan Strong, I think, kept New Japan and the foreign talent of New Japan alive and, you know, on the radar to a lot of extent. So I think they were very fortunate to have New Japan Strong as a avenue for some of their talent that couldn't get to Japan during the pandemic. So I think there was a great value there. But yeah, I'm not a regular watcher of New Japan. I tend to stick to what I can see on my television. Don't track down a lot of streaming service stuff. So, and like you say, there's just a show every night of the week.
Yeah, it's only so much you can do. Plus watch the other stuff that's not wrestling, right? Let's go to the junk drawer. This is kind of like everything else that happened throughout the month. Some notable things here. Orange Cassidy, Evil Uno, J.D. Drake, and Malakai Black appearing at PWG's Mystery Vortex show. That was their first event back after the pandemic. Some passings during the month. The Assassin, Jody Hamilton, Burt Prentice, Bobby Eaton, the one and only, and then also Dominic Nannucci, all passing away during the month of August. MLW announced they were going to be moving their November show to Philadelphia. They were bringing back War Chamber, and they were pushing back a September show in Dallas to March as they kind of get their schedule set. Nicole Savoy signed with MLW. Tajiri, someone you know rather well, made his was set to be making his debut at their next show. And then Arez, it was announced he was signing a multi-year deal with the company. CMLL, kind of a tumultuous year down there, saw three of their champions leave. Also, the second Mystico left as well. And then Caristico got his name back. NWA continued to do their thing. Two straight nights of pay-per-views in St. Louis. Trevor Murdoch defeating Nick Aldis in a career versus title match, getting starting his first NWA world title reign in a multi-month angle there. Ric Flair appeared on the show and did a promo where I didn't really understand anything he was saying. It's rare to say that with a Flair promo, it seems these days, but I didn't know what point he was making. It wasn't he was drunk thing. It was just kind of like he wanted to put over the NWA, how it meant to him, and just kind of did this whole kind of circle and just a loop and just kind of kept going and going. But regardless, Ric Flair making an appearance and getting paid for being at NWA 73. And then La Rebellion won the tag team titles. NWA Empower, which is the night before, Camille defended her title over Layla Hirsch. The Hex won the women's tag team titles over Red Velvet and Kylan King of AEW in the tournament there. Awesome Kong appeared and officially retired. And then Chelsea Green, working all over the place, won the Invitational Gauntlet. NWA Hard Times 2 was announced for December. And then finally, Triple Mania, the one and only Kenny Omega, defending his title against Andrade El Idolo. Ric Flair, we just talked about him, actually accompanied Andrade, then expected to be his future father-in-law. That would certainly change down the road. And he got involved in that match physically, of course, because, you know, that's what Ric Flair does. Deonna Purrazzo winning the Reina de Reinas title and becoming a double champion there. At that point, she was still Impact champion. Andrade was slated to win the championship over Omega, but it was changed at AEW's request because they didn't want him to lose the Impact title and the AAA title and just within a short amount of time. Ultimately, it was up to AAA to make the final call, and they said, well, let's just keep it on Omega. And eventually a title would be stripped anyway because Omega is all banged up and having surgery. Thoughts on any of that? I assume you probably definitely, I assume, have some thoughts on the passing of Bobby Eaton, but thoughts about any of that stuff?
Yeah, the Bobby Eaton one is the one that hit me the hardest or the most memorable of everything that you just said there. Just that he was one of those guys that I was a gigantic fan of as a fan. And I was a body mark. Like, you know, the Road Warrior is what first grabbed my attention. I was a big fan of the Bulldogs. And it's like, I was a fan of the big muscle heads. And it's like, Bobby wasn't that, but it took probably less than a minute of watching Bobby Eaton wrestle to me ignore the fact that he didn't have the physique. He was just that good. He was one of those, you know, dream opponents of mine. The guy that if he wrestled, I watched it, I taped it, I copied it on VHS and watched it over and over again. And then finding out afterwards that he was just legitimately the nicest guy in the world. I did a House of Hardcore show for Dreamer in San Diego, I think, somewhere in California. And Bobby was there, and we ended up sitting beside each other on the half-hour shuttle ride to the airport when we were done, and I talked to Bobby the whole time. And he was just the most humble, nicest, sweetest guy on the planet. And in my opinion, in the ring, he was as good or better than anybody. And I remember as a fan thinking, again, fan of the NWA and tag team wrestling, it's like Arn and Bobby were those two guys that seemed to be just, you know, incredible ring generals and the best. And I never got to wrestle either one of them. But throughout my career, when I started meeting and talking to people that worked in WCW and the NWA, I would always ask them, and no slight on Arn whatsoever, but every single one of them said, Bobby's the man.
Yeah.
That it's just like no other. And so when he passed, and again, it's not like he was in his 80s or 90s, so it was even sadder, but just the sweetest, nicest guy, and, you know, more talent than half the industry put together. So it was such an amazing loss. And then I think the other thing, just the, and again, because I was a fan of that era, it's like, you know, the NWA hanging in there and doing the shows honoring their past and acknowledging their past and stuff. It's like, it holds a special place in my heart. Again, it's tough to be that number four, number five, whatever they are, but it's cool to have them there. And it's cool that they do shows and acknowledge, you know, the history of the NWA, which is so important to me because that's such a big part of my fandom. Mm.
So talk about that bus trip real quick. Is that a case? So when you get on the bus, is he sitting there by himself and you like, oh, it's an opportunity to sit next to talk to one of my idols, or does he sit next to you, or how does that happen?
I honestly don't remember. I tend to not be a chatty socializing guy, and it was early in the morning. So I just got up and walked to the back of the bus and sat in the back seat in the corner. And then the bus was getting full, and Bobby just walked down and sat beside me. And Bobby was a very chatty guy, despite the accent that makes him really hard to understand at times. He was from the South legit, but he just sat there, and again, I think they acknowledged him or something at the show and just put him over. And he was just so overwhelmed by the fact that people of this generation even know who he is, let alone everyone from this generation, you know, almost worshiping him and putting him on a pedestal. Like, it just baffled him, and he couldn't believe it. And he was so grateful that anyone from this generation would even know who he is and would talk to him, let alone, you know, respect, honor, and just, you know, be amazed by him. So it was fascinating to just talk to him, because he couldn't have a greater misconception of his place in the industry, because I think he just thought, I was a guy that worked. I hope someone remembers me. And everyone else are like, are you kidding me? You're one of the greatest ever. Yeah. And it's nice, because often in wrestling, it is the other way around. People that it's like, yeah, okay, dude, yeah, you had some success, but you weren't the greatest thing in the history of the world. You can shut up now.
Yeah.
And Bobby was just the opposite of that. So just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being.
Did he know who you were?
Yes, I wrestled on the show, and he knew who I was.
Oh, gotcha.
And again, it's like ranking the two of us, I would put him well ahead of me, but that was certainly not Bobby's opinion.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Well, Lance, you've been more than generous with your time as we run through this month of August. So I know you have a big week coming up here. This is going to come out on Wednesday, so some of this stuff has already been out there. Obviously, you were out Sunday Wrestling Observer Live. You have an appearance with our friend, my MMA partner here for the Year in Review series, Paul Fontaine. You're going to be doing an appearance on his video podcast, Grandpa Dez. And you're also doing some other stuff as well. I believe on Friday, is it the Wrestling Buddies edition you're putting out? Or go over that again. You talked about it with Brian last week.
Yeah. All my crazy wrestling buddies from high school, the kids that I grew up, and again, known them since probably grade one, most of them. So when we were like six, and they were the crew, one of them in particular, that really helped foster and grow my wrestling fandom. And we did wasn't backyard wrestling because we actually did it in front of the school audience in the gymnasium and so forth, did wrestling shows, and I won a championship in a worked shoot tournament in that we did worked pro wrestling matches, but we had to win legit as a shoot. And I won, and I actually still have the championship that the one of us made. And we just tell the story of becoming fans, the crazy shows we ran, their thoughts of when they found out I was actually getting into wrestling. And then they end up actually asking me some questions about the industry and so forth. So it was a real fun trip down memory lane on how Lance Storm, or actually how Lance Evers became Lance Storm. So I will be dropping that, I think, on Friday. And actually, as soon as I get off here, I'm going to start sharing some photos from our high school yearbook and photos of the championship belt I won and so forth. I'm going to tweet a lot of stuff out this week to hype and introduce you to the cast of my crazy wrestling buddies from high school.
That's awesome. And obviously, yeah, you have a couple books as well. You have stormwrestling.com. You're still doing the training sessions you mentioned earlier, the one-on-ones?
Yeah, I don't do a ton of them, and it's the holidays, so I'm not pushing it too heavy because I again, in January, I'll push it heavy again to keep busy. But yeah, I do occasionally SWA virtual training at gmail.com if you're interested in some virtual training. Just don't expect to do a session over the next week because it's Christmas. But yeah, I still offer that. And yeah, I actually do have two ebooks, Stories from the Road, the commentaries and stuff that I wrote for my website back in the day in ebook form on Amazon. There's two of them. The second one actually was edited. So the spelling and grammar mistakes are far fewer in the second book. So, but yeah, they're both up. I think they're like $1.99 or something. So it's a pretty cheap investment if you want to hear what I had to say as I traveled the roads as a professional wrestler.
Edited by Todd Martin, I believe, right?
The second one was edited by Todd Martin. I should have got him to do the first one too, to be honest. If you've followed my tweets or anything else I've written, my grammar and spelling is not always top notch.
Well, Lance, you and I bonded on Twitter over Saturday night's main event when I was doing my recaps of those for the website that most of them got lost due to a bad website crash. So all that stuff is lost to ether. Maybe we'll redo those. We bonded over one of the best matches of all time, Tito Santana versus Rick Martel. You remember that match? That was so good.
Fantastic.
Oh, yes. My God. If that's
talking of great baby faces.
Jesus. If people, I can't remember what date it is. Easy to look up in on Wikipedia as far as what show it is. Go watch that show. It was like the second match of the night or something. It might even be in the third, but it was such a great match. It was one of those, again, I just like kind of just took hold of it and was like, wow, it's really, really good. They had a second one later on, I think when Martel was doing the model gimmick. But the first one I thought was just so good. So good.
Yeah, Tito was just an amazing, amazing baby face. And Rick Martel could play either side of the fence. He was great.
He was. Yeah. So we bond over Saturday night's main event. All these years later, we are here talking about the month of August 2021. Life is strange like that. Lance Storm, thank you so much. Have a great holiday season and hopefully talk to you again sometime.
All right, man. All the best. Take care.
All right. Big thanks to Lance Storm for dropping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter, Lance Storm, and all that good stuff. You guys know where to check him and Lance. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. And it's crazy to think that all these years ago, you know, you watch a wrestler in the ring, and all of a sudden you're talking to him on your podcast, and he's just kind of like one of the crew, right? It's just weird how life works like that. But anyway, that was a fun conversation. And now we move on to the final 4 months of the year. However, we still have a best of or year review MMA edition, episode 3 coming up in that series, which will help wrap up. That will be July, August, and September. So kind of trying to do these concurrently. That hopefully should be coming out rather soon as I work out some dates with Paul. And we'll have some stuff next week as well. And yeah, we'll try to get this wrapped up. The whole series will not be wrapped up by the end of the year, because as most year review pods should, a lot of things happen the very last few days of the year. So the December edition will come out the first week of January, as will, I believe, the fourth edition and final edition of the MMA year review series as well. So no big deal there. Okay. So again, big thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. And I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our great podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. If for some reason you do not hear from me, another episode by the end of the week, have a great Christmas, great holiday, and be safe. Do not drink and drive. Plenty of options out there with Uber and all these things. Just be safe, get vaxxed, wear your masks, all that good stuff. Just be safe, be smart, and that's really all you can do in life, right? Until next time, insert catchphrase here.